Kansas City mayoral candidates will face questions during the campaign from all manner of groups. On one notable occasion, it was East High School students asking the questions, and as one candidate noted, the questions were as tough as at any forum the candidates had appeared in. That's why back in December, we sat down with three of those students, none of whom will be old enough to vote this spring when Kansas City picks its next mayor. We were curious about how they felt about this group of contenders and if the candidates really answered their questions. With us are three juniors, Denise Martinez. Denise, nice to have you. Welcome.
Thank you.
Damian Singakun is also here. Damian, welcome to you.
Thank you for having me.
Benoit Bilobela is here. Nice to have you too.
Thank you for having me.
Why did you guys want to do this? Because none of you will be able to vote next year when the elections are held. Denise, what's going on?
Well, I felt like the part we played in this, you know, because we're young, because we won't be able to vote, it played a really big part in why we were doing this. You know, we're young people stepping up to this, to problems that other people who will be able to vote won't, you know. Just the fact that we were so interested in wanting to do something about these issues that, you know, were concerning us, especially in our community, that we were wanting to do something about it. It really brought us all closer, and it really made us focus on all these issues that nobody's, you know, bringing attention to.
Right. Damian, do your friends at school, do they care about this race? Are they engaged in politics at all?
I wouldn't really say so, but, like, this has really, like, shown students at our school that, like, we do make a difference. And even if we can't make a difference now, we can always, like, talk to, like, our parents because they're old enough. And we can even, like show them, like, even if they haven't registered or maybe they just, like, need help, we can definitely help them with it. And since we even, like, came up with this event and we learned new things about each candidate.
Right.
You know, it can just really, like, show them that, like, what they're missing out or – maybe, like, they have their own views, too, and maybe, like, one of them, like, actually, like, sparked their views, so maybe, like, you know, they would vote for them.
Right. But, well, were you surprised the candidates even showed up? You're high school students.
Yeah, I'm really surprised, because, like, that don't happen to any other schools in this area. Mm-hmm. So, like, what I'm really happy about is, like, the fact that they show up and that really means a lot to us, not just to East High School, but to the old East side of Troost. So that really stood out to me.
You know, what issues are important to you? These folks came in. One of them is going to be running the city next year. What did you want them to focus on, and did they?
To me, I feel like they should focus more on developing economics on East side of Troost more often. Because we see all these areas, the west, by the east, most of the side, like, we have roads messed up, we have sidewalks messed up, we have houses like that all are messed up. So I feel like we should build, like, somebody should have to build economics over there.
Yeah.
Like, bring economics over there.
Damon, what do you think? What did you want them to talk about, and did they?
Going with Benoit, I really liked how Phil Glynn, how he brought up, like, how he can bring housing, money, jobs, employment to East Side of Troost. And, you know, that just shows, like, how much of a businessman he is and how all of his, even though, like, all of his questions or all of his answers started with him and Elizabeth, you know, it was,
who's,
like,
Elizabeth?
His wife.
Oh, okay.
So, him, like, talking about how he's going to, like, bring all this stuff to East Side of Troost and help develop it into, like, a better area. I seem like he's the main one for me that stood out to talk about this situation.
Mm-hmm. How about you, Denise, as you look back on it?
Well, the question I asked was focusing on how the mayor will focus on bringing more money to the Kansas City public school districts, you know, and in the question stated economic development being important, but that our, you know, development in the schools was important as well. And I'm going to side with them on saying the business expansion and the economic development towards the east side of Troost, it really meant a lot to me because I've been living here my whole life and getting to see which businesses are lacking that attention and support. And that the question I asked was, it really meant a lot to me.
Yeah.
And because they only had 1 minute to respond to my question, it really let me see, you know, where their values stand.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, you know, for you guys, was it tough to even come up with the questions? I mean, it's listen, I do this for a living, right, asking questions, and you have to know something about the city, sure, and the issues, and these things get complicated really quickly. Did you even know what to ask them?
Well, we spent the entire semester working on these questions, and when our teacher, Ms. Perna, first came to us with this project, you know, you guys are going to be asking the mayor's questions, and you guys are going to be...
Did you freak out?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're going to be coming to your school. You're going to be confronting them about issues that they wouldn't talk about otherwise. So we're spending these days looking at certain issues that nobody is talking about, that nobody is even, you know, bearing an eye to, and we're getting deeper into it and finding certain things that bother us as a community and as a whole, and problems, you know, that would really make a difference when they're solved. So we're looking at these issues every single day, and we're, you know, composing these questions, right, and constructing them. And
Damon, did you have any idea what the issues were?
A little bit, but whenever we got into groups and we studied and did our research about these problems, we figured out a lot of things. And my group, we did police brutality, and we learned a lot about like their hours and training and like what they train in. And we saw many issues, and we thought of some solutions for example, the diversity, treating colored people. We saw that they had less hours in like teaching people, teaching police that how to deal with it.
Ah.
And we also saw that like they focused more hours into shooting. So like, due to like them getting more hours in shooting, they probably think that maybe that's their first move to do.
Right.
When they see a colored person. And like in the end, we all came up as a class and we developed these questions, and that's how we got our questions to ask these mayor candidates.
Yeah. You know, the other thing that strikes me, Benoit, is there are a lot of issues out there. I mean, there's a lot of things on a mayor's plate. And did that strike you too?
Yeah. Like, we see all these issues like happening, in our areas, but they're just not enough support. There's just not enough aid. That's why, like, we came here and stood up, like, so we can, like, inform, or we can tell the people that we need help. Like, we need, the east side of Truth need help. Like,
yeah, I get that completely. And the other thing I was thinking is that the mayor is a really important person, but he or she only has so much power. He or she can't wave a magic wand and suddenly magical things happen. It just doesn't work that way. Did that come through in your research as you looked at all this?
When we was researching, we learned a lot of stuff too. Like, we know that mayors don't have all the powers, but we know that the people who can really change are like the governors and stuff like that.
Right.
So we just try to put our voice out there for people like to listen to us and like stuff like that.
Yeah. You know, young people have this rap that you all don't show up and vote at election time. You guys aren't engaged in the issues. Is that a fair criticism?
I'd say no, because as you see us, we're trying to make our voice like heard,
right,
by many people. And like,
I'm wondering if you're the exception to the rule.
Like, in a way, since, we can't vote right now, but, like, I feel like, you know, later on, we can really show people that, like, the young people out there, that they can actually, like show people, like, that they are involved and mm-hmm. that they want to be able to vote and are just
political. I get it.
Yeah.
Do you think this is changing, Denise?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I was asked plenty of times, you're not going to be able to vote next year. Why are you doing this? Mm-hmm. You're playing no significant part. And for me, that was my top reason in this. I'm not going to be able to vote. I'm not going to be able to say, hey, I think you're going to be the one to make changes. I'm not going to be able to do any of that. So me even placing my hand in this and being so ecstatic to do all these things, it really brings a lot of value to it. We're all here trying to make a change, mm-hmm. you know, and it's just the bring it into action that really makes it different. And that criticism really isn't fair, you know.
Yeah.
Young people are, they have so much potential, and to actually be able to use that and bring that into action should mean a lot to our community, and it should mean a lot to people who aren't doing anything about it, who are underestimating
right.
us.
Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Up to Date. We're talking with three East High School students who are part of a mayoral forum in which a series of mayoral candidates came and answered questions from the students. So how did they do, Damian? I mean, what was your overall takeaway? Were you impressed? Were you disappointed? How did the group do?
Some questions that they tried answering, like, they kind of dodged some of our questions.
Did they?
Yeah.
Imagine that, a politician dodging a question,
well,
right?
It's not really
a
dodge. Like, they, like, ran around it, and it's kind of like, I was kind of, like, not disappointed, but, like, I was kind of let down a little bit.
Did you call them on it?
No, not really. Because we didn't have
able to.
Yeah.
That's kind of hard to do, right?
We also didn't have enough time to get through all the questions, which kind of what I think we need to a little bit work on next time we do one. But I don't know. I feel like maybe like they could have probably answered a little more and like be more direct about it. About the answering our questions.
But they only had a minute, Denise said. So
yeah. Well, that was for my question.
Well, that was for your question. How much time do they have to answer?
I think there was like two.
2 minutes.
2 minutes. So that's a pretty long
time.
Yeah,
my question was the last, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, you have 1 minute to answer this.
Yeah. So how about you, Benoit? Were you disappointed or pleased?
I was pleased. Like, I got all the answers that I needed to me. But one thing that I was shocked about, like, was kind of disappointed, was, like, all the candidate was trying to, like, when we ask questions about our area, they try to put it like as a whole. They try to answer like as a whole Kansas City. Like they're not trying to answer like as a part of East of Truth or.
You wanted them to focus on that part of the city. Yeah. And so that disappointed you a little bit.
Yeah, that kind of disappointed me a little bit.
Did you walk away with one favorite candidate?
Damian
mentioned he liked Phil Glenn.
Glenn to me. Yeah, I like Phil Glenn because like, he's trying to put business out there on East Side of Truth. Like the fact that he's trying to build homes, bring more business in East Side of Truth, like that stood out very much to me because we have a lot of people that don't have jobs. We have a lot of people that are homeless, that need jobs, that need a place to live. Like they don't have all that. That's why I feel like economics should be first, on the East Side of Truth. Like they should build more houses. They should build more shops, more stores. We literally have to go go to Walmart for 10 minutes instead of like a 5 minute or so. So I feel like we should bring those stores up in East Side of Truth and fix more roads and stuff like that. And all that is done by economics. And
do you see homeless people as you go about your daily life?
Yeah, a lot. I see a lot.
Where are they?
Independence Avenue, like I see a lot of them over there. So I seen kids, I seen adults, a lot of people. One day I was coming from work. I used to work at Taco Bell on Independence. Came from work, and I just saw this whole family standing right there. They didn't have nothing, like nothing, literally nothing. And I just went up there to give them some food.
How did you feel about that?
I mean, to me, it was a really disappointment. Like, how can you? A family just right there and you're not helping. I mean, that's why we are a united country. We're supposed to be united all together, but we see all these other people like separated from being united. We see all these people like don't have like the life that they deserve in this country. But I feel like we should like fix more on that. So it was really disappointing to me when I saw them like
that. Yeah. We have sort of two votes for Phil Glenn here, Denise. Who was your favorite in the group?
It's hard to say favorite. I mean, I really did like how Phil Glenn, like Benoit said, used him being a business owner as reference to solving certain issues. And one of the candidates that really stood out to me, I mean, they all stood out to me. I really liked what they had to say, was Jolie Justice. She, I was talking to somebody about this earlier. I liked how she was focusing more on talking to these people, talking to the people in these communities and seeing what works for you? What problems are you going through? I mean, everybody's circumstances are different. So obviously not one solution is going to fit all, right? So I really liked how she was incorporating talking to these people, going to their houses, seeing what's going to, what can I do for you?
Right. Did anything funny happen during this debate?
Yeah.
What happened, Damian?
Jermaine Reed, he took Swedish fish And he ate it like in front of everybody. And
what kind of fish?
Swedish fish.
It's a little candy, a little. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
He just took it and just started eating it, and like everybody was just laughing at him.
Yeah. What else happened? Anything?
I feel like the forum was a pretty serious, pretty serious little event. Besides that little thing that happened with Jermaine Reed, it really brought some humor to the thing. It was, like I said, very serious. So he was brought out to be a very humorous guy, and that made him stand out.
I'm just guessing, and you really haven't talked much about it here, that one of the big issues facing students at East High School and maybe students everywhere east of Troost is this whole idea of violence.
Oh, yeah.
Shootings and gunshots and all this stuff. What did you hear from the candidates about that issue? And did you leave feeling more confident that this issue can be addressed, or is it just too difficult? Yeah, Denise?
You know, I'm going to bring it back to Julie. Just as she was saying, we need to bring police officers more in contact with the students, more in bring them into school, get them to know these people, to personally know these people.
And because lack of trust is
a
real big deal.
Yeah, for sure. Developing a relationship. Yeah, developing that relationship and not looking at police officers and the police department as, you know, oh, snap, it's you, I got to go. I can't trust you. She was really focusing
on you trust the police?
You know, that question could be very broad in a way. I've personally never really had an encounter with them, which made me, you know, run away from them or lose trust in them. But, you know, when I see certain things happen to people I love, to people I know that, you know, it's easy to say isn't fair, it really does change your perspective on them and how you look at them and whether you can trust them or not to deal with certain things.
Mm-hmm. So you wonder a little bit in the back of your mind.
For sure. Yeah, I do. And I feel like nobody's at this point satisfied with certain situations in which they've dealt with. And, you know, like she was saying, we need to bring them in contact with everybody. Mm-hmm. We need them to develop relationships with people and with students especially. You know, we've been told we're the future. We are the future. We are now. So sooner
I have
or later,
news for you. Yeah. You are.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. So you know, we're gonna be out there. We're gonna be sooner or later out of high school, and God hope not dealing with the police more.
Right.
So,
Damien, how about you? Did you hear answers on the violence thing that helped you feel better about things?
Bring back to Denise and Jolie Justice. Her talking about how she wants to bring police to the community, just like communities to like maybe like because she's brought up like a story that her kid was playing with her friends and then like police came in like they were playing with them, so that just shows like that like police and like maybe kids from ours like our area maybe they can get along, maybe they can like play with each other and like build their relationships and maybe just have a good relationship.
You know, Benoit, does this whole idea of violence, does it make you nervous? I mean, do you hear gunshots? I mean, is that part of the world that you live in?
There was a place that I used to live in, 10th and Woodland. That place, I mean, it was rough because I've actually heard like two gunshots up there, and I've seen one person got shot on the leg. So that was like really bad for me. Like that was a bad experience for me to see in that area. So I feel like we should be more. We should like pay more attention to that and to the police, like what they're doing to their people. Like we should train more. We should train them more often. Like me seeing this as a kid, like I think that shouldn't be we shouldn't be seeing stuff like that.
Sounds like it really bothered you.
Yeah.
As it would anybody, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Damien?
Also say like in my area, there's lots of gunshots and I kind of get scared to walk to my bus stop, and I get scared in the morning because I have to walk to my bus stop, and like it kind of scares me because like anything can happen, and it kind of gets a little bit scary, and like hearing gunshots from my room, it kind of bothers me because like something's happening, and I think it was last year, there's like a shooting near my area, and they had to the police had to tell my grandparents to, like get out the house because it's not safe. and they went to pick me up, and they told me all about it, and all the roads were blocked, like the whole area is blocked, and I was just kind of freaked out because something probably could happen to my grandparents.
So you hear gunshots even some days when you go to the bus. It makes you nervous to go to the bus.
Yeah, or like just go home from the bus. Like I hear it like all the time. It kind of scares me.
It's not supposed to be that way.
No.
Sorry about that. Yeah. Well, I really appreciate our students coming in to visit with us today from East High School. Again, we were joined by Denise Martinez, Damian Singakun, and Benoit Bilombela.
Bilombela.
How did I do? Sort of close.
2 out of 10.
I'm going to keep working on it. Long after you've left here, I'm going to keep working on this thing, okay? That conversation originally aired in December. We should mention that in primaries on April 2nd, Kansas City voters will narrow the large field of candidates down to 2. Voters will then pick a winner on June 18th. Coming up, a conversation with award-winning vocalist, composer, conductor, and pianist Damian Sneed. He's bringing a multi-genre show to Kansas City this weekend that commemorates Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. I'm Steve Kraske, and this is Up to Date on 89.3 KCUR. And we are back. I'm Steve Kraske. Yesterday in the show, city-level lawmakers from Kansas and Missouri discussed affordable housing and how their suburban communities are dealing with more diversity. Hear what they had to say at kcur.org/up-to-date. Tomorrow, she says one of her most significant accomplishments was an overhaul of the city's criminal justice code. Now she wants to be Kansas City's next mayor. City Councilwoman Jolie Justice joins us tomorrow on Up to Date. Well, piano virtuoso Damian Sneed likes to say that when he performs, there's a deep river that I pull from. The same might be said of the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. when he preached in the 1960s. The two rivers come together Sunday evening at Yardley Hall at Johnson County Community College when Damian Sneed performs in honor of Dr. King's 90th birthday. This is a big production featuring the Kansas City Boys and Girls Choirs, showcasing repertoire from across African-American musical traditions. It'll sound something like this.
You got to move.
Because when the Lord
gets ready, you got to move.
You've got to move.
You got to move.
You've got to move.
You got to move.
You got to move.
You got to move.
How does he do that? We're about to find out. The man who pulls all this together, Damian Sneed, serves as the Houston Grand Opera Community Program Music Director and Composer in Residence, where he's writing an opera based on the life of Marian Anderson, the singer who famously performed on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial in 1939. Damian Sneed's on a 36-city We Shall Overcome tour in celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. And you name a genre of music and Damian Sneed plays it. He joins us now via Skype from Jacksonville, Florida. Damian, nice to have you. Welcome.
It's great to be here. Thank you so much.
How do you do that with your voice? What was all that?
Well, it's improvisation. It comes out of the tradition even of scatting with jazz, mimicking an instrument, arpeggiating the notes, as was done a lot in Baroque music, where a singer would be able to make a cadenza in an aria. So I was just doing that within that form and within that genre.
I get that, but you had to do it physically with your voice, and I'm just wondering, that was really something.
Well, I've been really fortunate to have worked with a lot of major, major musicians and singers like Aretha Franklin and the Clark Sisters. So it sort of comes naturally because I was sort of schooled by them, by that Detroit sound.
Is there a way that how do you do that with your voice? Give me a tip. How can I go home in my shower tomorrow morning and practice something like that?
You could start by trying to maybe mimic a trumpet or an instrument and using different syllables and trying to use your head voice, falsetto voice.
Okay. I'm going to start on that right away. That's a really big sound we just heard. It sounds like a whole lot of fun, is it?
It's completely fun, exhilarating, and very rewarding. Every city that we've gone to so far, we get an overwhelming response from the audience. People come up in tears. People say that they were encouraged. They were uplifted. And that's the whole point of this tour, We Shall Overcome.
You know, I just mentioned that you're on this 36-city tour. That sounds pretty rough. I understand you spent yesterday driving up the eastern coast of Florida. How are you holding up after all this?
Holding up pretty well. There are 12 of us traveling right now, and it's pretty intense because some nights we get off the road after maybe traveling 6 or 7 hours and have to go straight to the venue to change and get prepared, and we don't get to go to the hotel till maybe 11 o'clock or 12 midnight, because one thing we do at the end of each show, we make sure we're not just out front in the lobby area selling CDs, but we want to greet each person, take pictures, just connect with the people in the community. And that's what's most important, is connecting with the people.
I gather this was your idea, you know, to do this We Shall Overcome tour. So you only have yourself to blame for this grueling schedule, right?
Most definitely. But it's also, I guess, there's been an overwhelming response. This is the first leg of the tour. We're so excited about being there in the Kansas City, Missouri area at Overland, in Overland Park. But the thing is, next year we're doing this tour again. It's going to be actually longer and a little more intense. So I think at the end we would have covered about 70 markets.
Wow. This is a show, as I mentioned, that ranges over a whole lot of musical territory. You know, there's gospel and jazz and classical and all kinds of stuff in between. Tell us about the show. What can people expect here, Damien?
Well, yeah, there's classical music. There's some excerpts of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s speeches. There's jazz, gospel, blues, some funk. There's pop music, American popular music, R&B. There's American songbook, or as we call it, Broadway American theater. Everything that's American is there. It's really Americana. It's really the indigenous music of America. And there's so many different styles. There's something for everyone from all ages, from all cultures. I think anyone that attends the performance really has a great time, and they really find something that they can sing along to and with.
You know, when you're here in town this weekend, you're going to be performing with the Kansas City Boys and Girls Choirs. I'm wondering, you know, how many rehearsals do you wind up getting with these local choirs that become part of the program? How does all that work?
No rehearsal. We just come together at soundcheck, and the magic happens. We may run through a song or half of a song, and then we do the performance.
And you're okay with that?
Yeah, because I understand that the directors have received the music. They've received recordings, and they are preparing each group that we interact and perform with in each city. They've prepared them well, and it flows pretty easy.
How much of a juggling act is this program? Because, again, you've got lots of different human beings taking part on any one given night.
You know, there is a lot to juggle, but for me, it works easily because it's something that I've been preparing for by doing different styles. I never will forget one December. On Thursday, I had a full classical recital with Jesse Norman, where I accompanied her on piano.
Wow.
At the Grand Théâtre de Provence. And then the following day, I had to fly to Detroit, Michigan, to do a full concert with Aretha Franklin on that Friday. And then that Saturday, I had to fly to Toronto, Canada, through New York City, to do a performance with Diana Ross, where I was singing background with Diana Ross that Saturday evening. And I was just saying, wow, I mean, that's something I'll never forget, going from Jesse Norman to Aretha Franklin to Diana Ross, you know, from playing a classical recital to, you know, playing Hammond organ with Aretha Franklin and then singing background with Diana Ross. So
some people might say that's living pretty high on the hog there. That's pretty good. What do you take from those, you know, world-class artists? What's the takeaway for you?
They've taught me a lot. They've taught me a lot about endurance, about being prepared, about performing at the highest level of execution at all times. Aretha Franklin has passed, but they're still in my life, and definitely Jesse Norman as a mentor, and also my mentor, Winston Marsalis, and they always are there with listening ears, and they give me a lot of wisdom on things and can help steer me in the right direction as I'm developing in my career.
How starstruck are you when you're hanging with people like Diana Ross, and you've also hung with Stevie Wonder, I've read? How do you navigate that?
It's very humbling. They're all very nice people, but it's very humbling to be around people that have, you know, performed all over the world and that have you know, been doing what they're doing at a high level for such a very long time. You know, they've been consistent through different seasons, different decades, different generations. It's really amazing.
Were they all approachable? Were you all able to have a conversation with them?
For me, all of them were very, very, very approachable. Yes.
Huh. You know, you weave in some of Dr. King's speeches in this performance. Which speeches do you pull from?
We pull from his popular speech, you know, that was made on the National Mall. And then also we pull from the speech his final speech that he did at Mason Temple Church of God in Christ in Memphis, Tennessee. Hmm. So we pull from those two speeches.
Hmm. Why do you do this show now? I mean, these songs and speeches have been around a while. Why compile them in this way at this point in time?
You know, that's a very good question. And when I was putting this tour together, I kept saying, maybe this won't be so appropriate now, but it is very appropriate, very apropos, very necessary with all that's going on in our communities, in our schools, in our churches, in our homes, in our nation, and in the world governments, and just in the world period. There's still so much for us to overcome. And it's not just racial injustices and disparity and socioeconomic, you know, issues, but also, like, for example, I was adopted, and for years I had to deal with rejection and being, you know, depressed and sad about wondering why I was given up for adoption and how I fit in. So there's so much that comes to mind when you think about saying we shall overcome. So it's very necessary. It's very appropriate. And it's so interesting to me. You know, every time we do a performance, I listen to the speech. You know, it's the same, the same excerpts of the speech. But it's interesting that the words are so poignant and so like spot on for now.
So King is still speaking to you today, Damian. That's what you're saying.
Exactly.
That's interesting. The We Shall Overcome performance featuring Damian Sneed and the Kansas City Boys and Girls Choirs will take part in this celebration of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. As they celebrate his 90th birthday, what would have been his 90th birthday. That'll all occur at 7 o'clock Sunday evening at Yardley Hall at Johnson County Community College. For tickets, go to the Yardley Hall website. You know, what does King say to you today that you still hang on to? You mentioned your own life experience. What's he saying to you now?
Well, the last words that the listener will hear is, "Walk together, children, don't you get weary." That's a quote from a Negro spiritual, an African-American spiritual. And it's so interesting, walk together, children, because there are a lot of differences that we have. People are categorized willingly and unwillingly into different categories. But if we can learn to walk together and build together and grow together in unity and to love each other, I think we'd be in a better place in the world.
Hmm. Well, let's play another clip from your We Shall Overcome CD that was just released last month. This is your arrangement on Simon and Garfunkel's Bridge Over Troubled Water.
Yes.
That's Bridge Over Troubled Water, one song on the We Shall Overcome CD that was just released last month as sort of the foundational document for the We Shall Overcome celebration taking place this weekend at Johnson County Community College, 7 o'clock Sunday evening at Yardley Hall. Damian Sneed, who's put this whole show together, is my guest. You know, this notion that there's so much variety in your musical interest strikes me as so much as to who you are, Damian. I was struck by the fact that as a youngster, you were told that you couldn't play gospel music and classical music. Why would somebody tell you that?
Well, people, I guess their ignorance, not knowing, are feeling that everyone had to be compartmentalized. I heard that a lot. Oh, you can't play jazz and gospel. You can't play jazz and classical. You can't play classical music anymore because you play in the church and people are uneducated and they just bang on the piano and they don't really have a sense of form and style. And then, you know, it went every single way. Like no matter what genre I was playing, people were saying, well, you shouldn't, you know, do, you know, you can't play gospel well because you're too classical and you have too much technique and you pay too much attention to detail of, you know, the notes and when they start and when they finish and the crescendo and the expression and all that kind of stuff. And I just totally ignored them. I'm not created by Xerox or FedEx, Kinko's or Staples. I'm not a copy of anybody else. I have my own path and I've spent my life trying to walk in my own brand of who I am. And mm-hmm. I don't have to compare myself to other people, but I am Damian and I am trying to do my best in doing multiple styles and genres. And that's why Wynton Marsalis was one of my first mentors when he won Grammy Artist of the Year in classical and jazz,
right,
2 years in a row, two consecutive years. So, you know, it can be done. Maybe it's not for everybody, but that's fine. You know, they have their path and they have their life trajectory, and I have mine.
Is there anything?
But I got it a lot.
Go ahead.
Well, no, I said I got that a lot, surprisingly.
Yeah. Is there anything to be said for the idea that, you know, if you don't specialize in one genre, that you can never truly master the form and even move the music in a new direction?
And that's what a lot of people think. And many people who think that they are not moving their single forms in a new direction. Some people are. That's a very good point about moving in a different direction. I think you can move a genre or a style or move a specific area of art in a new direction when you understand culturally, literature, art, dance, writing, but also when you understand music and understand the different compositional techniques and styles and performance practices of the various genres and styles, I think then you're able to approach it more with more information, well-informed, right. You know,
despite Wynton Marsalis, you were also told something else when you were young, and that is, you know, you could never make it as a classical musician because you're black. You were told to stick to jazz. What was behind that kind of thinking, do you think?
That was actually told by one of my professors who was black, kidding. And he said, you really would be better doing jazz as an African-American male. You'll never be successful in classical music. And it was also told to me again by a colleague of mine at a school I was working at in New York City. And it was so funny. One day I was at Carnegie Hall conducting, and that person was in the rehearsal because I think I was conducting one of their students. And they looked at me with like such, you know, they were so astounded. And I just spoke to them and smiled. But, you know, it's interesting. I remember people said, oh, you'll never get into a conservatory. And so everything that I've done, I guess, has astounded those people that told me I couldn't. And do things, but it's been an interesting journey for me.
Hey, your response, again, I've read about you, has always been go beyond the expectations. What does that look like for you, Damian?
Well, I have to, because I've been fortunate enough to have hands-on contact with people like Wynton and Jesse Norman, you know, these mentors, and Twinkie Clark and the Clark Sisters. So, because I've been fortunately blessed to have that kind of connection with them and Diana Ross, I have to do more, better, quicker. You know, I have to make sure that I maximize on those relationships and on the impartations that I've received from the opportunity of working with them closely.
You know, I get the idea that at the end of the day, classical jazz, you know, hip hop, whatever, it's all music. But is there one genre that you ultimately find more challenging than the others?
They're all challenging in their own way. Jazz, classical, gospel, R&B, all of them are challenging. I don't see one more challenging than the other, actually.
Do you enjoy one more than the others?
I actually enjoy being able to go back and forth between different styles. Then I'm not bored.
Yeah. You've also said when you perform that there's this deep river that you pull from. Tell us about that deep river.
Well, the deep river are my experiences. I just finished a master class with a group of students here in this particular market and city that I'm performing in tonight. And I shared with them, if you aren't touching people with your art, there's no point in standing up and performing. I mean, you have to touch people. And so I've had a lot of negative experiences in life, but I told them not to look at negative things as a bad thing, but they all work together for good. It was very difficult for my mother, having advanced dementia, was on a hospital bed at home because I didn't want her to go to a nursing home. That's a whole other conversation. And she was there in a feeding tube, and I had to watch her decay and go through the holidays without her, you know, be able to say happy birthday, Merry Christmas, you know, Mother's Day. Very painful. And people had no idea I was still performing and traveling and, you know, not able to share all of the great things that were happening to me that she was directly responsible for because of nurturing my gift and my talent by adopting me at an early age. But that was painful. But, you know, it gave me the ability to touch other people because now I understand other people's pain. You know, even from that, I understand, now what it's like to sing a song like Bridge Over Troubled Water and to be able to pull, like artists pull from a palette different colors of oil painting, you know, for oil painting. But it really gave me the ability to pull emotionally in a place very deep, a deep, deep place, to be able to connect with people. It doesn't have to be that. It could be someone who has a relative who's incarcerated, someone who may have a bad report from a doctor, maybe struggling with a terminal illness, or someone who feels, you know, that they're in a glass ceiling in life, you know. There's so many things, but that's the deep river.
That's Damian Sneed. He started playing piano at age 3. He was playing at his family's church when he was 5, and by age 8, he was hired by the church as the musical director for the senior choir. Again, he's part of the We Shall Overcome tour this weekend, Sunday at 7 at Yardley Hall at Johnson County Community College. Tickets online at the Johnson County Community College website. Damian, we'll look forward to seeing you Sunday night. Thanks for taking some time with us today.
Thank you so much, Steve, and thank you for the listening audience.
You bet. And this is, again, one more track from the We Shall Overcome CD. This is I'll Make It All Right. Tomorrow on the show, women have firmly established their place in the sports world, not just on the field, but coaching, reporting, and refereeing as well. We'll discuss being a woman in a male-dominated career. I'm Steve Kraske, and you are up to date.